Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Sorry for the delay, everyone. We officially on live on the board. What it do? This is King Eric, the Media Assassin. You're now tuned in to episode 544, live and direct at Off the Cuff Radio. I got my whole team matched with the facts in the building. What's good, man?
What's going on, man? Look, happy St. Paddy's Day to everybody out there. It's all green everything. A fresh Friday on OTC, the freshest frequency of all. We are live and direct, sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, King Air Productions, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Dirty Basement Radio, Core Financial, Jesse's Boutique, and an array of thousands and thousands of other legendary luminaries who are with us. We are so happy to have you with us. And shout out to our co-host in spirit, a lot of Sandman, Lady Chinchilla, you know. Tonight's show is very special, y'all. Our guest tonight reached out to us a couple of months ago. Shout out to Trop, John Austin, and of course Nick Garcia, our three amigos down in Florida. And this youngin' is from Florida as well. And we chopped it up. Humble, hardworking, honorable, and definitely full of drive, determination, and dedication to the craft. Been working for a lot of years in terms of putting it down as a producer. King and myself, you know, once we really got to chop it up with him, we were like, yo, son, got to come on the show. And dude's credentials in terms of production are, to say the least, incredible. I mean, he's produced for Kevin Gates, said NBA Youngboy, Lil Boosie, Mr. Fab, and so many others. And we are so honored and privileged to have him on tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Luxury Curve. What it do, man?
What's going on, man? Hey, thank you so much, first of all, for having me, and second of all, for that intro. I'm loving it. Thank you, man. Thank you so much. You know, very, very appreciated.
We appreciate you, man. It's great to have you on. You know, we made it happen. You know, King and myself, we were just like, we had to coordinate it, but we got together, man. So, you know, of course, you know, we got it going. Like we always do about this time, Lux. Your story is wide and ranging, you know, and definitely incredible in the ascent. We got a couple hours. Let's get it. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Perfect. Just to start off, I'm from Miami, Florida. I've been doing music since, you know, a teenager. I started writing music probably, I would say, like in seventh grade in middle school as a form of, you know, just like therapy for myself, just as a way to vent and stuff like that. And little by little, I just, you know, I started seeing, you know, what music was and artists like Bow Wow and things like that, and it made it seem more possible. So once I started going to local studios and things like that, I realized there was always a demand for production. And I realized, you know, being a younger artist, it was kind of hard to get in the door the same way someone old, you know, an older person would, being 16 and things like that. But the moment I would say I had production, everyone was like, wait, what? And you made these beats? So, you know, early on, that's what I started focusing on. It was the production, and I started building a team little by little, which I started with a friend named Roger, and we started our company, Supply and Demand Productions. So from there, we ended up signing producers and things like that. But, yeah, that's pretty much how I started out. You know, I realized there was a demand in production, and, you know, rappers, it's a little tougher on them. So, you know, I realized the production side was way more in demand, and I enjoyed it as well. So I started to lean more towards there instead of the artist side of things.
Definitely. Who were some of your influences in terms of when you started getting into it and when you started learning about the musical notations, theory, everything that goes into not only the sonics of a beat, but really building it from the bottom up?
I would say that there's different parts of what influenced me, because there's certain influences on me, I would say, like the DJ Khaled's and the Diddy's that, you know, they actually produce a record and put that masterpiece together. And then, you know, there's others like the Kanye West that actually, you know, they go crazy composing that stuff, and like the Scott Storch, you know, which is, you know, you see him playing the keys and he's amazing at it. So, you know, for different things, I got different inspiration. So, you know, I try to incorporate in what I do, I'll have somebody like Scott Storch that could play the piano, and then I try to be the, because that's what I enjoy, I try to be like the DJ Khaled, P. Diddy of the situation, and, you know, just get the right player for every part of that chessboard, you know? Let's say whether it's the pianist, the artist, maybe a singer, you know, even if it's a graphic designer, whatever it is, just, you know, really putting it together.
Now, you said in terms of recruiting the right people for it, have you worked with Scott Storch?
We actually, if I'm correct, early in our career, I've met him several times because Stitches and him had a great relationship. I'm sure they still do. We've met several times, and if I'm correct, we collaborated only on one beat, but it never really like made it out there or anything. As you may know, you know, in the music industry, you'll make millions of songs. People have, you know, entire albums, hard drives of music, amazing music. And, you know, unfortunately, some of it doesn't make it out.
Yeah, shout out. Yeah, Dr. Dre, shout out to him with the detox. We're still waiting on it, Dre. We still want that album.
Exactly. So you're, you know how it is.
Yeah. When you started really making noise out there, Lux, because obviously the start for any artist, the main thing is just getting heard. And then once you get heard, it's all about hoping everybody rocks with it. And then when everybody rocks with it, then you're able to really move forward. When did you really, really find out how big you were getting and the chance that you really, really had an opportunity to make this your full-time gig?
I would say, like, I always knew I wanted to do it, but when it really hit us, like, we had did the Brick in Your Face record, and I from the rip, I knew once Stitches got out there on World Star or anywhere he was able to be seen, I knew he was going to go viral. That was the whole plan of it. That's why I told them we had to put him on World Star. So I knew it was coming. But I would say it really hit me once I seen, like, the Miami Heat and, you know, Ed Sheeran and, you know, all sorts of, like, people I would never expect to you know, you expect, you know, or you want it, but you don't, once you're there and you see all these type of people actually rocking with your music,
that's when it started hitting me. Once I saw how big brick in your face was and what type of, you know, because it wasn't just one kind of, it even ended up making it on Comedy Central, South Park with the sync placement. So just the range of how many different places that record hit, that's when it really hit me. I was just like, okay, you know, it's real. People have heard this all over the world.
Man, now, we were remiss, Lux, from the beginning to not mention Stitches in terms of that brick in your face. And that hit around, what, 2014. Okay, 2014. Thank you. So, I mean, but the record was viral once it hit. So, I mean, this was something, you know, I mean, when you listen to that, I mean, I mean, that brick in your face. Now what you going to do with it? Now what you going to do with it? We were like, okay. It was like, yeah. So take us to the genesis with that, Lux. How did you and Stitches meet, and how did those sessions go that Brick in Your Face would eventually become what it did?
Okay, so meeting, me and him met through, I had a friend, they ended up passing by, and he came with somebody that they saw I had the studio, and he just told me, he's like, hey, I have a friend that you might want to meet that he does music as well. And it turned out to be Stitches. The next day, coincidentally, Stitches was looking for an engineer. And I went to school for engineering, SAE, but I really engineered just to – that was my plan B. If I couldn't, you know, do my thing producing or as an artist, I knew I had a for sure, you know, I'm going to engineer and I'm going to get paid for it by the hour. So I already knew what I was doing in that sense. So I hit him up. I was like, hey, I saw you were looking for engineer, you know. So-and-so told me about you, RIP, my friend Xavier. He had brought a friend with him named Chaviano, who he's the one that told me. So I ended up hitting him, and he's like, yo, pull up to the studio the next day. And I ended up going. We ended up meeting, and we set it off. He was showing me the studio, which was Circle House Studios. And if you're from Miami or, you know, a lot of people that even aren't, you know, if you've heard of the studio, it's beautiful, humongous. It's a mansion. State of an art studio. So we ended up meeting. At first, I wasn't really, I was just there to be like an intern of the engineer. I needed to watch the head engineer of Circle House and sponge him so eventually I could just be the engineer for Stitches. So I wasn't really allowed to put much, not because of Stitches, but because of the other people who were in the picture. He had like a manager at the time. So I wasn't really allowed to put any input as far as production or any of that. But little by little, me and Stitches built a relationship outside of the studio, and we were together pretty much every single day. You know, from morning to night, I would take him to the studios. We would do everything together. So as that started happening, I saw he had a need for production. Like how I was mentioning earlier, it's, you know, it's always the same thing. People need beats, you know? So I took a little break from making beats because I wanted to focus on actually making the things happen. So I already had started supplying the man with my partner, and I told him and Stitches, I put them together, and I'm like, you know what? I want, because I saw Stitches' image, and I'm like, I want you to be like the Gucci Mane, and I want him to be like your Zaytoven. And what I meant by that is I just wanted, when people heard him, I wanted it to be a specific. Like, as soon as you heard that beat cut on or you heard Stitch, you know, you already knew, like, both of them went together, like Shawty Red and Young Jeezy or, you know, like,
right.
Those type of stuff that you
right,
you
know, Cash Money and Manny Fresh.
Exactly. You know, so that's pretty much how it started off, and we built a great relationship. We were pretty much everybody in that circle. We were brothers every day together. From morning to night, 12-hour like studio sessions, whether it was Circle House, Mix Masters, any of that. And we created his first project, which it was No Snitching Is My Statement. We produced the majority of it. The only other collaborators on it were Scott Storch, 808 Mafia, which was Southside, and there was one other producer.
Lex Luger.
Okay, there you go. So pretty much we were the only up-and-coming producers, but we produced the majority of it because we were the ones with him every day. I was tracking out. I didn't mix any of it, but I tracked out most of it in Mix Masters and in Circle House. But, yeah, that's how that started piecing out. And I developed a marketing plan for him based on always us, like, we would travel everywhere. We would go, you know, Atlanta. It didn't matter if we went Whole Foods. Honestly, we go, you know, sometimes to dangerous places. Anywhere we went together, everybody always had the same reaction. They would want to point and, like, tell the next person, like, hey, look at that guy. Look at him. Because, you know, at that time, there was no, you know, I would say, like the 6ix9ines or any of these modern, you know, the Lil Xans, the, you know, any of these modern artists with the you know, crazy face tattoos. There was not really any of that. At the time, we had Gucci with, like, the ice cream and, you know, a few people like that. Wayne, you know, he's always done his thing with the face tats. But we didn't really have, like, a lot of face tats. So once I realized everywhere we went, people wanted to show somebody else him without him noticing, I'm like, yo, this is beautiful for marketing. We need to put you somewhere where the whole world could see you and point and do exactly that. You know, like, go call somebody and be like, hey, look at what I just saw. So I ended up telling him World Star was the place to do that. So once we created all the music, we shot the video for Breaking Your Face. And, you know, from there, it was history. He paid literally his last little bit of money he had. He invested it to pay Q to put it, I think it was $2,500 at the time, in one of the big screens. And they ended up putting that thing back up for, like, a whole week, big screen for free from how good it did.
Oh, man. Dude, they're, like, Lux, you just gave us, like, like, so much history. So we got to backtrack on so much in terms of, like, you know, you start in the studio, in terms of how it is, because this is something that a lot of artists have to understand from a perspective of how you really get your foot in the door. Because it's all about being able to, like you said, connect with the artist, but you have to take the temperature of the room that you're in terms of who you are around, in reference to, you know, kind of feeling everything out before you really get out there and really, really, it can suck sometimes, because especially when you know you're good and you're seeing stuff that needs to be done, but you don't really have that pull in there just yet to have an influence. But once you hang out, you kind of see everything, you begin to really kind of ingratiate yourself into it. Because the Stitches story by itself is, I mean, incredible in terms of the rise. But let's go back to the studio. What did you learn about the patience, studio etiquette, making those observations, and ultimately, like Barry Sanders on the juke with the Lions, finding that hole and running through it?
As far as something important I learned from what you're saying is playing my part. Because early on, and shout out to him, because he actually showed me, you know, everybody in the team had to play their part at that time. Sly, who was managing Stitches at that time, he had called me out one day in the Stitches, in the studio, because there was a producer and other people helping Stitches, like, formulate the song. And even though I felt like I had great input, my job was to sponge the engineer and, you know, play my part. So I was putting in too much input. And I realized later on, at the time, you know, I was younger and I was like, man, what the hell? Boom, you know. And, you know, it turns out, look what it became. But I understood everybody has to play their part for everything to move accordingly. Everyone can't be all over the place because, you know, there's something for everyone. But at the same time, not everyone sees the same vision. You know, you could be the best player in the game, but if they haven't seen what you have to bring, you can't necessarily try to jump the gun, you know?
Right. Now, in terms of when you all actually, like you said, when you and him were hanging out, what is the process usually? Because when we talk about all the great producer duos, when we look at Aaliyah and Timbaland, like you said, when you look at Shorty Red and Jeezy when they were starting, of course, you know, I mean, you know, I mean, it was just the era that you're naming, Lux, you're bringing us back to such a magical time where the artists and producers were synonymous with each other in terms of how, I mean, Snoop and Dre, of course, you know, I mean, it's like peanut butter and jelly, you know, chocolate chips and cookies, it all goes together. how do you find that synergy with an artist in terms of understanding, in terms of their formulation of their bars, rhyme patterns, understanding notation in terms of how they ride the beat, how you construct a beat going to it? What are the little things that go into building that chemistry with an artist that ultimately you and them vibe enough to where when you get in the studio, the magic happens?
I feel like vibe and energy is one of the most important things. Because if you step in there and, you know, the vibe or the energy is off, it's never going to work. So you got to make sure, you know, everything's cool. Everyone's in, the right mood. You don't want to bother anyone. I think that's one of the most important things. Then from there, us personally, we would almost all the music we made with almost everybody we made music with, we would cook up on the spot. So whatever we'd read the room, whatever the vibe was, if for whatever reason somebody was sad that we're working with, we're not going to make a club track. We're going to make something according. Something just happened with the family. All right, let's make this type of record because this is the vibe, So most of the people we would work with, we spent a lot of time together, or even if not during that session, we were spending time together. So, like, to me, it would more than anything, I would say the vibe, because if you go off the vibe, you know what that person, what direction they want to go in. Then from there, it's if they're in the room with us, at least we know, hey, do you like this type of snare? Do you want it faster? This, that, we work with them.
Absolutely. Where did it go? Absolutely. Now, King and myself, me and my brother, we always talk about these things in terms of marketing and about how some of these artists, they don't always, they want to look the part, but they don't want to pay the part in terms of getting the music out there. When you talked about World Star at the time, this is going back like 9 years ago. This is like when World Star is kind of like they're budding, and they got a name, but it's like they're like the outlet back in that day, So it was, you're trying to get on. World Star is like the place to get a video. What was that like in terms of what you all learned along the way about marketing, pushing the song, and riding that momentum?
I'm sorry. So the question is like what I learned from
yeah, in terms of how you promote the song, and how you put your finances properly placing to get it out there.
Well, first I would say for like every single case is going to depend. So, depending on that person's case, you got to develop some sort of plan. Because if you, the thing, if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. And I believe in that, like, heavily, So you got to know where you're trying to go. And, I for Stitches, for me, it was easy as far as what to do. Because since I spent that time with him and I saw the people's reaction, I knew what direction to go. But what I've learned is investing is definitely, if you're not going to make it if you're not investing, that's for sure. But you definitely don't want to invest blindly. We already saw, World Star's the results it would give. At that time, everyone would rush. When you got home, you were jumping on World Star to see what was going on. And then I already knew what it was. So I knew more or less what to do with it. But what I've learned is that every case is completely different, because when that took off, a lot of people were like, damn, if I just throw something on World Star, I'm going to go viral. And I would try to tell them, I'm like, some people would think I was negative, but I would tell them every case is different. If you're not, if the song isn't something to go viral and you don't look different enough to go viral, you might just waste your money. So you got to develop maybe a different marketing plan, So that's something I've definitely learned, that For everyone, every case is going to be different, and you definitely need a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. We look at those times, King and Lux. We think about how a lot of these artists came in the game. When Snoop came in with the cool-ass, laid-back flow, then the Chronic drops, so then you add the little smoke to it as well. Shit, when Cash Money came in, you know, in the late 90s, once they really, really got that momentum, they were all about the ostentatiousness of the bling. That's what they, you know, a lot of people, you know, say that they ushered in the bling era in terms of, like, all the shit that we were seeing in jewelry and cars. And, of course, you know, shout out to the boss, Rick Ross, you know, representing Miami. Him, Jeter K, you know, Matty Ice, you know, the whole MMG, whole slab. When Ross came in, you know, it was about being the Miami big boss, the kingpin, you know, running the streets, you know, Carroll City Cartel, you know, MMG. I mean, that's what it was. So everything you said, Lux, is absolutely on point about how you become identifiable and, you know, resonate with the listening public. So when the song blows, and it's like, what's it like in terms of doing the tours and navigating through, because we got to keep it real and off the cuff. There was some controversy along the way, we're given some situations. What did you learn about navigating about all of that as well?
As far as the tours and things like that, honestly, I never made it to go to the tours and stuff like that. But we made most of his biggest records, and shortly after, we distanced a little bit when a lot of the controversy was happening. So I can't really speak for him, I can't really speak for him or anyone else on, you know, things I wasn't there for. But
right.
Understood. From my aspect, I would say, you know, like what I enjoyed is just seeing, you know, the song would play on the radio. I would see people like Birdman, the player from the Heat, you know, I don't know if
Chris Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, Brick everywhere for basketball is a term, or that's just the Miami thing?
Well, no, I mean, basketball, Brick is like, I mean, back in the day, you know, when we were, you know,
you're familiar with the term as well, right? I don't know if that's...
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, so for that reason, you know, like a lot of people from the Miami Heat loved it. The Seattle Seahawks would come out to it. I remember we went to the Bellator. Like, you know, I could tell you, like I said, from the, you know, the stuff I was there for, you know, I was a part
right,
of. But
right.
We went to he performed, I forgot who was fighting. It was Tito Ortiz versus somebody else at the Bellator, and Stitches performed, bringing them out. You know, we were there literally right on the floor, you know, right next to, you know, we could have damn near touched the ring and stuff like that. So besides that, you know, the South Park placement, which I was the one that negotiated that, I grew up watching South Park, laughing to it as a kid. So, you
Shout
know, certain things
Parker
like
and Trey Stone. Yeah.
Yeah, man. No, they're definitely dope, man. You know, they put Brick in your face on there. So, yeah. They're definitely dope for that one. So, but yeah, I could speak on, you know, a decent amount of dope stuff that we were part of. You know, even seeing Ed Sheeran really loving the song, Wiz Khalifa saying that he loved the record. You know, the record did all sorts of stuff that blew my mind away.
I mean, Ed Sheeran and Wiz Khalifa, two legends in the game. Shout out to Ed especially. A lot of heads be hating on Ed, but Ed is talented. That dude has got some soul in him. To have the accolades, the applause, the acknowledgement from our players in the music industry in Hollywood, to make South Park, you know, is pretty much damn near equivalent to making The Simpsons. Once you get in that, like, you're in the whip. You're in the whip once you get on South Park. With the reach that show has. What was it like when Matt and Trey came to you about the placement for that?
Well, they didn't come to us directly. You know, with big companies like that, they have a lot of music supervisors, and, you know, there's a lot of people that play a part to that team. But crazy enough,
right.
I received a call while we were in L.A., and everyone, you know, I had told bitches, I told the team, everyone thought I was getting a prank call when I was telling them, you know, what was going on.
And I was like, nah, this, it's not a prank call. This is real. You know, South Park really wants this record. But obviously to us, it was, you know, it was unrealistic. Once they sent the email over with the offer and, you know, we negotiated. And once everyone saw what was really going on, it blew all of our minds. I actually didn't even get to catch the episode live because since we were in L.A., you know, the traffic, how it is over there and stuff, I didn't catch it live. But once I was seeing all the clips, because the thing with TV and film, they say, you know, until it actually plays, you don't know if you made it, because sometimes things could be cut literally right at the last minute. So I wasn't happy.
True.
Like, yeah, I wasn't happy. So, you know, we were driving in the car. And I got 100, you know, Instagram videos, text messages, you know, from all the people, family, friends, fans, all sorts of people sending it to us. So it was an amazing feeling because it was something, you know, our families know, you know, everyone was familiar with it because you could do certain things, but it's, you know, you could tell someone, oh, I'm the shit. But if they don't recognize something you did or that I'm great, you know, to them it's just like, oh, yeah, he's cool. But once you do something your family or other people are familiar with, it'll actually make them proud. So it was a beautiful thing, you know?
Perfect segue. The business aspect of it, Lux. Publishing, everything, because all this stuff plays a role in terms of getting it in TV shows, movies, commercials. What do artists need to understand about all of this as well?
Well, the most important thing I would say is either owning your music or making sure whoever's owning it, which would be, you know, obviously the label you're signed to or whoever's in charge of controlling your music or anything in that nature. Like, cause if you don't, I would say you want to do it yourself, but if you don't, you have to make sure that people are very trustworthy because that's where the majority of the money, like, lies. Aside from the distribution money, you know, there's all sorts of royalties. Anyone who makes music should be getting about, I would say, like 6 to 8 different types of income from the music you make. It doesn't matter if you're a composer, producer, an artist. As long as you make music, you know, you have to be writing, of course, because, you know, I forgot to mention, you know, obviously some artists don't write their own music. But for writers in particular and composers, there's a lot of royalties and different things that you would get. But the thing is, some of these people, obviously, depending on what you sign, because we're not educated enough or don't have the right people negotiating the terms for us, a lot of the times they give these things up or they just don't even know that it's out there. So I would say it's very important to, first off, you know, educate yourself very well. And then second, you know, either stay in control or make sure whoever's in control is very, very trustworthy, because if not, you're not going to end up very happy.
Oof.
Look at the game. It's spicy like that.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry for being late, man. I had to take care of some things before coming on, but I think
you
have a producer on, because this is another question I want to shoot at you, and I want you to also talk about the importance of what happens behind the scenes of collaboration, because people have the assumption that just because you collab with somebody, they best friends, they chums. But at the same time, the paperwork got to be done. You got to make sure the split is right. It's a lot of business involved, so there's really no friends in this game. How true is that?
Oh, it's true to the T. Like, the other day I was talking to somebody that I'm doing their publishing administration, and they're like, no, the person's family. And I said, it could be your mother. I would tell you, get her to sign the paper. I don't care if it's your mother, your dad, your kids. When it's money, and especially when it's a lot of money, things get funny. And the thing is, you don't – every person reacts to money differently. And then everyone has a different perspective. So you might think you're entitled to more than you really are, or I might think I'm entitled to more than I really am. So if there's not a paper or some agreement, once the money comes in, you might say, nah, we're not 50-50 anymore. What do you? I did more. I was thinking more than you were. And, you know, that's why you see so many disputes and things like that so often, because a lot of the times things aren't even, you know, discussed the right way. I see videos going viral of producers saying, oh, no, if you talk about the business beforehand, don't even step in the studio with me. which I think that's backwards because that's how the disputes happen. We need to talk about it first, so when the money comes in, we're not even arguing. You know, we're just splitting it how we said.
Man, both of y'all speak facts. I mean, look, even rest in peace Whitney Houston and her father. You know, they got into some money disputes about it in terms of where he sued her, you know what I'm saying, about some stuff. I mean, look at Birdman and Lil Wayne, you know, with that situation. Juvenile said it first back in 2001 in Double XL. I believe it was the August issue when he was on the cover, and he spoke on it. Even with Jeezy and Kinky B, disclaimer, we're speaking on all of this stuff because all this stuff is documented in terms of what happened. So we're not just blowing smoke out of our asses just talking recklessly. These are all documented litigation issues between individuals. I mean, you know, and Jeezy and Kinky, when they went to court behind it, you know, Jeezy won his case because for all the things that were going on with him and Kink, you know, they never had any documentation because Kink was trying to sue him for $5 million in terms of, you know, restitution for all the stuff that was going on when they first started. And then, of course, after Jeezy hit with his major deal. And, you know, obviously, like you, King, Luxury, like you said, the money gets funny because there is always the question of contribution. And when there's contributions, you got motherfucker just watching, and then he thinks he put in somehow because he rolled the weed up.
Yep.
You know,
some
so,
people play for ad-lib. I gave you the ad-lib.
Yeah, you know, so like you said, but that's how I keep the business respectable and reputable, because the terms and conditions need to be discussed before the actual process is put in play. You know, this is, even if it's an upfront money, you know, I'm paying you up front, this is how much it is. You may get some on the back end, you may not. Obviously, we're not lawyers. We are not, you know, specialists in this. We have seen record label contracts, and whew, we have said this, King. How many times have you said this on the show about those record contracts?
I love it. Man, I'm telling you, like, they be thinking like it's like a notepad of like five pages. Like, even if it is five pages, you gotta like decode all this lawyer language. And
yeah,
people,
the jargon.
A lot of times, how they get screwed, and how they feel like people get screwed. They're so impatient to get on. They're like, man, look, rent due next month. I ain't got no money. Where I sign? You know what I'm saying? Not knowing when the record takes off and soon they expected some kickbacks, the label taking all the kickbacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something artists have to understand, you know, Master P said it best some years ago when he was talking about how a lot of artists begin caught up in these bad deals. And he was saying, if you've been broke for 20 years, you know, what's going to be the difference being broke another year? It ain't going to change nothing. Because he was talking about how a lot of these artists are in a rush to sign these deals. And he's like, you know, a lot of these guys get caught up because they sign the first thing that's put in front of them. And it's not just relegated to music, y'all. We have seen these situations play out outside of music, like with Vince Young, the former football player, University of Texas quarterback, played in the NFL with the Titans, Bills, and Eagles. And he put his uncle in charge of his finances, and it went left. You know, rest in peace, Gary Coleman from Different Strokes. You know, his parents were in charge of his estate, and they blew through all the money.
I want to make a quick comment. Sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead, please.
This is what I always say. Some people will be like, oh, no, that's my brother. Or even for parents,
right.
You know, your
right.
definition
of what how you would treat your brother or even your parents or a friend or all of that is different. That's what I always tell people because, you know, Birdman calls Wayne his son and look at their dispute. You know what I mean? And how you're saying, look at how many family members you're in their dispute. So, you know, and sometimes it might not even be just because they're family, but it's at the end of the day, it's when that money comes in, you'll remember 6 months ago, you know, a pack of gum I bought you or what, you know what I mean? So it gets real funny, you know?
Yeah, it is. And that's something when the money comes in, you know, people, there's a lot of, in the illustrious history of Off the Cuff, we've been blessed to do this. We've talked to so many people about how this game plays out in terms of celebrity, finance, maintaining both. And when you get into this, the biggest thing everybody has to understand is this. The entertainment industry can be profitable, but it is not profitable for everyone. And that is the biggest illusion people have coming into this. Everybody thinks they're going to get rich off of this, and that's not the case. You know, we don't dig in anybody's pocket in terms of asking them what they made, this, that, and the other. We won't dig in your pocket much. You know, we're not going to do that. We will just ask in terms of making sure were you fairly compensated for what the arrangements were in your situation of when you start negotiation, because this is when the song starts trending. Once you start getting it into the shows, when YouTube, tell us what you learned about what you said earlier, Luxury, about the multiple streams of income, and you should have at least 8. When Bricking Your Face started to really roll, and then you got the South Park placement, what were those publishing checks like in terms of it? And also, too, if you could, tell us about how many YouTube plays have to get played on a video before it actually starts yielding residual income.
Okay, so as far as residual income, I would say once you're in the 100,000, you should probably start seeing, you know, some checks, but really you have to have consistent plays because, you know, you get paid per play. So, you know, if you just get 100,000 plays and it stops, then that's when your money would stop. So it really has to keep on coming in. And obviously having different, you know, Apple Music, Tidal, the different ones, like having multiple, you know, it helps. And all of them pay different rates. Tidal is the one that pays the best rate. What were the other questions? I'm sorry. As far as the about the incomes that we so as far as South Park, I'll disclose what they paid us. So it was a beautiful $15,000. I thought it was nice for the stink placement.
Okay.
Obviously, you know they didn't. You know the rights are still ours. We make the royalties from the song every 3 months.
Okay.
You know,
that's my next question.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's one of the streams of income that I was talking about. Every 3 months we see, you know, a check for royalties from South Park being played on Hulu, you know, wherever it's played, you know, on any type of network, we'll see it on, whether it's like, it'll say like, you know, cable television, Hulu, different things like that, and we'll see it on our royalty statement. Then as far as getting it placed on South Park, they gave us $15,000. So for anything you get placed that's, you know, a composition with a master side of it. Well, I think for any work, it's gonna be both sides. But in our case in particular, they were paying us $7,500 for the work side, which that's the underlying composition, which that would be what we composed, which, you know, the musical notes and that type of stuff, the composition and Stitch's lyrics, what he had written. Then the other $7,500 is for the master recording, which that's the actual completed song, you know, the full version, that's an MP3 version and so on and so forth. Because in some cases, the person that wrote the song, which would be the composition, wouldn't be in the master recording. Because, you know, as a lot of us know, there's so many artists that don't write their own music. So when a song has to be cleared, everybody that is part of that song has to be compensated. Whether you were just the artist on the master recording side, it would be you and whoever, you know, well, for the artist to get compensated, it would be whoever owns the master, which if the artist is independent, they would own it themselves. If they're with a record label, then the label would be handling all of that and then, you know, paying the artist whatever's agreed. And then on the other side, it would be the composers, which some people confuse the term composers and producers, which composers would be the people, you know, actually making the beats, which and then producers actually put the songs together. So the composers would be getting paid and the songwriters would be getting paid from the composition side. And that would usually be handled through either a publishing company, you know, which a lot of them have, you know,
ASCAP, BMI.
Well, no, ASCAP and BMI would be, they're a PRO, which that's one of the companies that pays out royalties.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you need a publishing company. Some people have their own, and if, you know, you actually know the business, you could handle a lot of the stuff yourself. And then there's two other, you know, there's, you could sign a publishing deal, which that would be signing your catalog to somebody, and, you know, you usually give them, let's say, 25 to 50% of all of those songs, and then they would help you play songs, like whether it's getting it onto TV and film or things of that nature. And there's also publishing administration deals, which that's what I mainly do. And when you sign that type of deal, you're not signing over any ownership. I pretty much call it like a management deal of your catalog. So you're not signing over any ownership. You're just letting somebody help you collect any royalties you might be owed, negotiate on your half, you know, pretty much help anything to do with your catalog and make sure everything's in order. All the money that you're supposed to be getting paid is actually coming in from places like BMI and ASCAP that you mentioned.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is why on Off the Cuff Radio, we are the best show, and we get the best guests, because that was a lot of information that Luxury just gave, and I hope y'all were listening in full detail, because this was all facts in terms of what he was saying about how you need to make sure. Okay, we're not going to mention this artist's name, but remember that story that was told to us by somebody who talked about how this artist was making all the money because everybody was signed to his publishing company and they didn't get it? We'll tell you that. Look, Luxury, we'll tell you that story off air. We can't say it on air because we got a phone call about that situation where we kind of that's from the one of the lost files of the show. We got a phone call about that one. We'll tell y'all that story one day, just not tonight. But Luxury, it's obvious you've accumulated a sizable, more than considerable, if not immense amount of intelligence in this industry. The way you're talking, obviously, whoever's listening out there, sign this man to an A&R or vice president position of a record label, because Lord knows this man has the intellect and the acumen and the vision to do it. Yes. Yes. What was the process, Luxury? Because we're going to get everything you talked about, too. We're going to get into that in a little bit about how do you feel about a lot of these artists selling their publishing and everything. Okay, we're going to find out why you hate it in a little bit. How did you manage, what was the process in terms of learning all of this stuff? Because you just broke down this shit that people, I mean, they've been in the game 20 years and don't understand all of it, that you broke down in like 10 minutes. Run with it. Run with it like Travis Henry and Knock the Blocks Out. How'd you get all this? Derrick Henry.
So, right, little by little, in different places, I started acquiring the information. I would say it all started with having the viral hit Brick in Your Face and not knowing where any of the income was supposed to come from, because I planned everything for like the song except how to get paid. So once everything was actually going down, you know, the song was getting big, aside from, like, the sync placements and stuff, I was like, damn, where the hell's, like, you know, where's the money supposed to come from? So little by little, I started stumbling on things like BMI and ASCAP, which the person who actually put me on to BMI Heavy was Cuzzle Fly from the Bay Area. He actually, when we were out there, we were talking one day at he had a show with a friend from the Bay as well named Lil Rue. They had a show together, and we were just talking about music and money and things like that. And he told me, he's like, wait, what? You're not really making much money off music. Like, what do you mean? And he, like, flipped out on me. He's like, nah, you're crazy. You need to make sure you have everything registered on BMI or ASCAP. And I was like, nah, but, you know, it, only one song was on the radio. None of the other songs have been on the radio. So, you know, I didn't. I was like, nah, it's nothing. And he's like, listen, every single song, no matter what song I've dropped, it's registered and it's paying me. So from that day on, obviously, I went and I registered all my music. So I started seeing, obviously, you know, the checks were pretty nice for, you know, being in the beginner in the music industry. Since we were independent, you know, we didn't have to, which that's why I think it's, you know, like I said, if the deal's not beautiful, you want to own everything yourself, because you're actually going to get, if you do things right, you know, you're going to get a beautiful check for it, or at least what you really deserve. So from there, I kept learning little things here and there. And crazy enough, this is why I always tell everyone, you have to be humble and respect everyone. I had a contractor working at my house, which he didn't even, you know, he was a Hispanic contractor. He barely knew English or anything. And he was telling me that he might know somebody that could help me, that he was a teacher at the University of Miami. And I was like, oh, I don't know if, you know, he's going to be into what I'm into, because, you know, I'm into, like, hip-hop and rap. This guy's a teacher. But I'm the type of person that, you know, I don't care who it is or what it is. I'm going to meet them, and I'm going to respect them. And, I'm just that type of person. So I went to meet the man, and he was the first person to tell, like, speak to me about the word publishing. I had never really, you know, they had offered us a deal, which was horrendous. We won't even speak on that. But besides, like, that deal, I had never even seen the word publishing. And he was telling me, he's like, you have to have a publishing company, because if you don't have a publishing company, then somebody else is going to charge you and try to take your whole catalog to collect the money for you, which that's, you know, what happens to the majority of artists. Instead of signing a publishing administration deal, they sign a publishing deal and don't get the benefits of what they're supposed to, and end up signing over half of their catalog. But so long story short, when I spoke to that man, he told me I had to have a publishing company. And I still was, like, confused, because with BMI, you don't need the publishing company to collect 100% of your, like, royalties, at least from performance royalties, when with ASCAP you do. So I was like, oh, I don't think he knows what he's talking about. But I made the publishing company anyways. I listened to him. And fast forward to later on, I started learning about other companies that pay out mechanicals, and, you know, like the Harry Fox Agency, for example. And they told me, they were like, oh no, to collect royalties from us, you have to have a publishing company, and you have had to have a major release, you know, like, let's say from a major record label or something in that nature. But luckily for us, we had a release, Brick in Your Face. So that's what, you know, that was our major release, which, if I didn't have the publishing company made how he had told me, I wouldn't be able to collect those royalties, and I would have had to do what he told me, which was, you know, signing my catalog to somebody, or if I got lucky, finding an administrator. But in those times, it was a lot more rare for someone to just administer it. They wanted to, you know, they wanted your publishing.
Wow, man. This is the type of thing, luxury, that artists need to understand. We have seen too many horror stories of how a lot of these artists, they have a hit song. I mean, we look at what happened with TLC and how they had talked about in the documentary Behind the Music on VH1 years ago, how... they were millionaires for like 5 minutes. but they didn't understand the deal they were signing in terms of how the publishing and the royalties were, and then Pebbles got everything. This is how Prince, when he was going through his issues with Warner Brothers many years ago, this is how Prince was able to maintain his career, because Prince was self-contained. He wrote, produced, composed, performed. He was, even when we look at R. Kelly, separate from the situations that he was in. But we found out even in the end with R. Kelly that he didn't even own his music. And, you know, I mean, and Prince, you know, was fighting to own his, but Prince was able to still make money because all he did was just, even though Warner Brothers owned his name, he just changed it to a symbol, and he was still making music, and he was still getting paid off of it. So he had the money that he could fight those lawyers, you know, that Warner Brothers had, because he could pay his own lawyers, like, yo, run me my money. Like, this is, and y'all not, oh, yeah, and by the way, I got this slave on my cheek because you all ain't going to be owning my name like that. It's deep. Luxury, this is deep. I mean, even going down to the trademarking of your name, while we're on that. Oh, man, we got so many jewels with this so far. What's the process in terms of making sure that your name is trademarked properly as well?
Well, you definitely want to get a trademark. Like, there's specific lawyers for everything. So for anything you do, you want to have that specific type of lawyer. Don't use, you know, the ticket lawyer for, you know, something else. So you want to make sure you get a certified or a well-known lawyer in that department. And, you know, you would get a trademark lawyer, and they'll walk you through the process. Well, they'll obviously, you'll have to pay them, and they'll help you, you know, trademark whatever it is, whether it's your name or a slogan or anything of that nature. But I would say that's very important, because right now I can trademark your name, you know, and if you don't have it, let's say you're famous, now, you know, anything you do, you either have to change your name or I'm going to be getting paid off of it. And sadly, it doesn't really matter. Like, if I beat you to it, then I own it. So that's something really important. But I would say it's best to definitely handle it with a lawyer, because some of that stuff, once you, you know, I've seen the process, and me personally, I can't do it myself. So I would definitely recommend a professional lawyer in that industry to handle it for anyone.
Absolutely. Okay, so now we're going to get into the part that you absolutely hate, but we're going to discuss it anyway. Okay, over the past 4 or 5 years, we've seen a lot of artists, Future, I believe, Neil Young? I'm just going to stop with Future because I don't want to be fucking up nobody's information out there. Anyway, the gist about people selling their publishing. Matter of fact, Dr. Dre, because I believe he sold his as well. And Future sold his. This is a controversial position, because some people will say you get a lump sum and you get to cash out on it. You know, you get buku dollars, you're making crazy bank off of it, and as a result, you're set for life. And some people are saying, why would you work all these years to accumulate something that is your baby that you birthed, and now you're going to basically give it over to somebody else and let them do whatever they're going to do with it? Luxury, you are a creative spirit in the most comprehensive and complete fashion. So we know that you being an artist, your work is very personal to you. The floor is yours. Run with it. Go.
Okay, so I believe in, just like in anything, every case is going to vary, because I believe somebody like, let's say, QCP, getting that cash,
yes,
he's going to flip the shit out of it. And, you know, let's say whatever those royalties were going to give him, you know, in the next 50 years, he's probably going to make it in the next couple years, because, you know, he's a very well, you know, he's a great businessman. You know what I mean? So somebody
quality
like
control,
that.
Quality control, y'all, yeah. If y'all not picking up on acronym, with Coach P and Coach K, yeah.
Exactly. So with them, I would say, you know, that's a special case scenario. But with the average person that, you know, let's say you're not the best with flipping money or crazy with, like, businesses, and, you know, if you're just – if music is your main income and you're not constantly investing into different things, then I think sometimes it may not be as beneficial as people may think, because they get happy, obviously, when you get the lump sum. But if you're not investing it into something else, then you just give up one of your investments. So one of the biggest problems, I believe, with people selling their catalogs is just that I would say about 90% of them aren't even collecting the full income from their catalog. So I would love to buy the catalog from Justin Bieber or any of these guys, seeing that, like, you know, if I see you're not collecting all your money, I'm going to buy it in a heartbeat. You know what I mean? Like, of course, that's the steal. You're already, you know, I'm buying the what's going to be for the future on top of everything that's already staying on the table that you didn't realize you were leaving. So I would say I feel like one of the biggest problems is just education. I feel like if a lot of them knew and saw all the money they're actually leaving on the table from the publishing side, because, you know, as a creative, you don't have the time to sit there learning. You know, you just kind of got to trust everybody that's around you, unless you really make the time for it and read books or, you know, however, find your way to learn the knowledge. So I think the lack of knowledge is probably 90% of the problem. And then the other 10%, or, you know, let's say 20%, I would just say it's one of those things when people hear, oh, you know, I'm going to give you $1 million or $100 million, and they, you know, off rip, you think I'm set for life. And it's like the lottery people, you know, you hear every person that wins the lottery ends up, you know, even worse than they started. So I would say I personally, my music is going to be to my great grandchildren's grand, you know, so far down the line, because it's an investment for life. I'm not, you know, we're not giving that up. There's no purpose to do it, because at least since I know how to, you know, collect every single part that's due.
And that's important. That's something and we once again only say this because it did happen years ago with everybody, you know, we're older, we're showing our age, it's okay. That story years ago with the DOC and with Eazy-E, and how Eazy-E from NWA basically, you know, because for those that know the history, of course, DOC wrote a lot of that stuff for them. And Eazy gave him a gold watch and a gold chain, and that was the payment for all of DOC's publishing. That was over 35 years ago, and we are still like, wow. That's one of those infamous stories that happened, and we were like, whoa. But you got to stay on top of your business in terms of making sure that the finances are there and, you know, holding on to it. When you look at it, when you look at the hustle now with a lot of artists and how they're going for the independent hustle as opposed to a lot of signing with labels, even though some are looking to get on with labels luxury. What is your views on chasing the record deal as it was? I'm 45, my brother's 40. We came up in that time of watching artists, knowing what it meant to actually get a label deal. Well, a record deal, because the label deal back then was like very few and far between in terms of an artist having their own label to work under a label. But we're just talking about the process of even getting signed to a label to actually put out music. And it was an arduous process. And now a lot of these artists out here are doing it themselves. You came through that independent circuit of watching a lot of this. What is the difference between getting on with a major and then being able to do it yourself?
So, I would say for every single person, it's going to vary as well, just because every person has a different level of drive. So for for an independent, you're definitely going to need a lot more drive yourself, or you're definitely going to need a very strong team around you, because you're not going to have that major backing. But on the other note of it, like the good side, you own everything. You have your creative control. You could make a lot more decisions. The way that we cleared that South Park placement, for whatever reason, if let's say the label owned it or somebody else owns it, they could say no, you know, just because they're mad at us that day and not clear it, and we can't make that money. So I think, you know, being independent is, you know, it's harder work, but there's a lot of, you know, benefits to it. On the other hand, being with the majors, to me, if you wanted to be with the majors, first of all, I would think you want to build yourself up first, so you're not just coming to them, you know, empty-handed and get the worst thing possible you can get. But, you know, the benefits of it is you could get money, you know, pretty much lent to you for it. But, you know, there's a lot of negatives, like you're not going to own the music. Some artists don't have as much drive or things of that nature, so that's a good situation for them. You know, at the end of the day, it's business. So if it makes sense for you and it's building your brand or things like that, then it might make sense. But me personally, you know, I've always done everything independently. All I've ever had was a management deal for a short period. And, you know, our manager himself will tell you he never really did anything for us as far as getting placements or anything like that. He just gave us great advice. But I would say the independent ways is the way to go. You know, you see people like Mozzie, and I think the problem comes in where how you said, our whole life, all we've seen is the major thing. So it's like, you know, it's like going to the major leagues playing ball or something. You think it's the best thing of life because that's what we see. But if, you know, someone like Mozzie comes around and shows you, like, hey, you don't actually have to do that. And, you know, once he started showing those empire checks and things like that, I feel like that's game changing, because people could actually see there's another way to, you know, you could ball like the majors and still have your control and you know, a lot of benefits to it. You just obviously have to work a lot harder to get there.
And one thing about it too, Luxury, when we think about the independent hustle, this is all the guests we've had on this show over the years who are independent, who are signed to majors, legends. We all have this discussion on and off air about how you have to manage it, because the biggest thing, especially on a major, on an independent level, is you got to have an audience. And that is something, when you look at Mozzie, shout to Sacramento 916, Mozzie Records, I mean, to see what Timothy has done over the years has just been unbelievable. Just watching him. Now he's signed with CMG, shout to Yo Gotti and all them, Big Jook. It can happen. When we look at, you know, shout out Boo Rossini, you know, One Life, One Love Records down in Mississippi. You know, when you look at Cormega, what he did with Legal Hustle Records, you know, the independent game is great if you, and G Perico, Enterprise, you know, how they have all found their niche in the streets to where they really, 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 really have a following. And we come from the independents, so we really, really can resonate and understand and respect it, because King and myself, that's what we do with this show. But we also tell everybody, it took a long time for us to really get to where we're at today. And we tell artists, you got to put in that work. And don't lie to yourself about where you're at with it. You know, a lot of artists say, well, yeah, I got my city on lock. Well, you might, depending on where you're at, because some scenes are bigger than others. But the real test is when your music gets out of your city and people in other places recognize who you are. That's when you know you've really got something moving. This ain't for the weak, because you're going to have a lot of sleepless nights pushing you, like you said, Luxury, pushing your product, working hard, wondering who it's going to connect with and everything. You know, I know I'm being a little bit long-winded with it, but it's like, yes, this is something that a lot of independent artists have to understand. We see a lot of artists who think that they are, you know, really like that until they find out that they really don't have that pull out there like they thought they did. You know, and then you got a lot of artists who are working hard and they're just trying to find one new fan every day, you know, and we tell them, like, if your shit is good, good dope sells itself. When you were breaking your face blows in terms of like a wave of that movement, what does that do for you, Luxury, in terms of when you start getting those calls from like, okay, we need some of that dope on our tracks. We want you to work with us. So what was it like once you started getting those calls from other people?
It was humbling, you know. It was an amazing feeling to see people wanted that specific sound. And honestly, we actually would feel the love more when we were out of town. That's what really would blow my mind, because, you know, and back here home in Miami, to some people, yeah, you know, it's crazy, but it's more regular. But I'll go to places out of town, and you know, they're like treat me like if I'm a celebrity producer, and you know, I'm just a regular guy to me, you know. So that's really when how it hit me, like going to other places and things like that, and seeing people are, you know, they were crazy about it, and they, you know, they'll want to give us free stuff of whatever they had just because you know, oh, I'm a fan or this, that, and you know, they were trying to give us all sorts of, you know, let's say if it was gear or clothes or anything, you know, whatever product that they had, they were trying to give it us just because we produced that record. So it was an amazing experience.
And that's what I mean, Luxury, behind what it, in terms of once you actually are able to get it outside the area. Once again, I reiterate, when people really, really, really know about your music outside, that's when you really kick the door down. Now, Miami is already a hotbed. The history you all have is incredible. Two Live Crew, you know, Slip and Slide Records, you know, Trick Daddy, you know, Florida in general. I mean, DJ Jam Pony, you know, Magic Mike, you know, Kid Money Splat Pack, you know, between Miami and between Florida and Atlanta, what they were doing. 69 Boys, shout out, you know, Thrill the Player. You know, you all, what you all have done collectively in Florida has just been incredible. And we know about you all outside of, we know about you all, you know, and people know about all of y'all outside of Florida. But you got a lot of artists that don't necessarily ever make it outside of their hometown. And that's where, you know, it can be a struggle because it's like you said, you know, y'all going places, y'all getting comp, people are like really rocking with it. And that is, you're right, that's dope. I've been at those celebrity functions and I've been comped a little bit along just because I was there. So I know how it is when they respond to a big figure. But let's look at some of the people that you ended up working with later on. The situation with Kevin Gates, how did that come about?
Kevin Gates came about through Stitches. He was doing some songs with him, and we ended up producing, I think it was two records. I don't know if we ended up producing the third one. I think it was just two. Bitch, I'm Cooking, which is Fat Trail, Stitches, and Kevin Gates. And then we produced also Mexico, which is Stitches and Kevin Gates. They were planning to do a collaboration tape, but I don't know what happened that it didn't make it out. But that's where, you know, they ended up having, I think, like five songs together. So out of the five songs, we produced like two or three of them. I know those two for sure were two of the songs we produced from that.
NBA Youngboy, how did that happen?
That one was actually through the record labels. I contacted the labels, and they had told me that it was Atlantic at the time, and they told me that they needed something for Youngboy. So I had cooked up coincidentally with one of my homies from Louisiana, Michael on the beat. We had cooked up a decent amount of beats. So when they told us to send a pack, I was like, all right, you know, I already got something perfect for it. And I sent a couple beats that we had made with him. And crazy enough, how we found out about that one is it just leaked online. And, you know, that's how I found out we actually got the placement. The label never told us or anything like that. We just saw it online one day because somehow, I guess somebody, you know, leaked it or something.
Offset from the Migos. How did that happen?
That one was like a feature. Somebody paid him for a feature. But besides that, we've actually met him and stuff. He was cool.
Okay. And Mr. Fab, yeah. Because you went to the Bay. Now, we're going to get more about the Bay business because they know hustle like it is out of the Bay Area. Shout out to all of our folks out there, CMG, Spice One, Richie Rich, the whole crew. How did Mr. Fab placement come?
We were heading out to the Bay. At the time, it was just me and one of the newer producers that was signed to the crew. He had actually
yes,
put me on to a lot of the music in the Bay Area, and I fell in love with it. I started hearing, like, Jack and all that type of stuff. And we were heading out there, and one of my favorite songs is Calling My Name with Jack and Fab. So, you know, naturally, anywhere I'm going, I tap in with people. You know, I start hitting people up. I'm like, yo, I'm going to be in your city. You know, obviously if I fuck with them, you know, I'm going to tap in. And Fab actually hit me back. He's like, what time is the session, you know? And he pulled up. He really came through, and I fucked with him heavy. He's hell of a hustler. You know what I mean? He, at the time, the dope era was just picking up. He had the store they moved in. Now I haven't been to the new one, but we had went to the store, and after the studio session, the next day we went to his store and everything. You know, he was hella cool, gave us so much game, like, educated me a lot. He started, you know, putting me on. He's written a lot of, like, ghost-written songs. He's big on the business side of things, you know what I mean? So he was definitely a great person to work with because he taught us a lot. And, man, the music-wise, it was crazy because I didn't even see him write anything or any of that. You hear the verse, he killed the song, so... He was definitely an amazing person to work with.
Man, that whole Bay Area, I mean, shout out to, you know, Black Sea and Ruthless by Law Posse out in San Francisco, the Mechanics, Kenny Tweed and Forax representing Oakland. Of course, E-40 representing Vallejo. I mean, the 707, the 510, the 831, you know, the 408, you know, of course, in San Jose as well, Drew Deasy. I mean, The Bay is just different in terms of how they move. You know, Richie Rich, you know, Livewire, you know, Jay Stalin with Livewire, you know, Mozzie, of course. You know, I mean, the whole Northern California is just, when you went out there, Lux, what did you find in terms of how they hustle their music out there?
Okay, first thing I want to say is you going in on the Bay. I love the Bay Area. That's first I got to say. That's like my second home. But,
yeah.
Man, the hustle out there, well, not even, let me pause that. The independent hustle out there, big on the word independent. That
right.
Hustle out there is out of this world. Like, personally, and I've traveled to you know, all over the U.S. for the most part. And when I went there, it changed the game for me. Like, I just saw how they were, you know, from every aspect of what the label was doing pretty much for artists, you know, obviously not with the crazy budget, but everything that, you know, the major artists were doing, any artist was doing in the Bay Area. You know, they were pressing up their own CDs, taking them to the stores, you know, just the whole nine. You'll see somebody's CD and you'll be like, what the, you know, was this in Best Buy or something? And, you know, compared to back home, you know, we didn't really have that many, you know, there wasn't that many places you could come buy CDs or anything like that. So once I saw everyone pressing up their own CDs and how big the independent grind was, it changed everything for me, everything. You know, sometimes you just got to see something so you could have an example of what to go off. And I would say that the Bay Area is, you know, Like I said, their independent grind is something else because, you know, everywhere, you know, people have major artists and things like that. But over there, you have a lot of these artists, they're doing everything themselves, like from actually making this, you know, recording it, pressing it, writing it, getting it to the stores. There's a lot of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people don't even know about. And out there, you'll meet people that are, you know, artists that are doing every single side, every part of it themselves.
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of artists have to understand. You know, you got to get out there and really, you got to get out there and really show the people why they need to really rock with you. Even with King and myself doing this show, you know, we work regular jobs like everybody else. We love doing what we do with this, but it's also a situation where we talk to people all the time about, you know, we do a podcast, you know, then we show the people the work that we've done. But we're never afraid to interact with the woman because we are the common people. And we just love people in general in terms of being able to build from a level of no matter the culture, no matter the background, we all have a common respect each other, you know, respect for each other as human beings. You know, we always try to let people know that we're accessible, you know, with this show, you know, between, you know, his page, you know, with King Air Productions and Off the Cuff Radio and my page, T-Max and DA. For those listening out there, you know, we're accessible. You know, I keep my page private to keep the bots off of it, but my DM is open. You know, I read messages. It's like he reads his. So we always are going to be, we're always hustling, like Rosé said, you know, just trying to get out there and meet people. When you think about that you've had luxury and you're still having it, getting those calls, what is usually the negotiation process when these people get in touch with you and, you know, they say, okay, we need this, and how the numbers, you know, how those numbers begin to become, you know, how the math starts to math?
So first off, it depends who it is and the size, you know, if it's a smaller film or something like that. A lot of the times they'll disclose more or less, you know, their budget, you know, let's say on the entire film and stuff like that, or like the TV show. So they'll let us know already ahead of time, like, hey, you know, this is our budget or more or less. Mm-hmm. And we charge them accordingly. Depending the song, whoever's on the song, you know, we all talk as a team or as a whole, you know, and we make sure everyone agrees on what it is. And we charge the people accordingly. You know, like with South Park, for example, you know, we started at a price, like we started at a number. We were like, nah, we're not comfortable with that. We feel like we wanted a little more. And, you know, just like right. that with the company and the size of, you know, what the actual placement is or what they're trying to purchase. You know, every case is different. So, you know, you just got to read it by what you feel about it. And also sometimes it's, you know, let's say the exposure is good enough and it makes sense for you to say, hey, I'd rather go this way with it, you know, or not take so much, you know, like the Super Bowl, how they're saying some of them did it for free, but, you know, they got some crazy exposure that it's worth more than the money they would have gotten paid. So we just measure every situation by, you know, who it is, what it is, and how we feel about it and all those type of things.
Yeah.
And think also too. I think also I want to say too is people gotta understand how to step away business from homeboy business, because see, I think that's where a lot of people get caught is the homeboy business. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so you're saying as far as like selling the beats then, right? Not on the TV and film side.
On everything.
Yeah, like
on everything, like. Homeboy business done on, like, when it comes to selling beats, selling verses, doing videos. And then when the kickback come in and now the business part takes place, now they looking at it like, oh, you my man, or you snaking me, or you owe me this. That's where you start seeing the fallout. I'm thinking that's where people not only lose friendships and you see a lot of groups break up with this, but they're not understanding that it's a business at the end of the day. We're supposed to get paid.
Exactly. No, you're not lying. For sure, you know, the business is an important part of it. And sometimes, you know, it could happen to the best. You think, no, this is my best friend, or this is my brother, or this is whoever it is. And just that's what I was saying earlier with, like, the whole situation with the family and all that. Your definition of best friend or brother or sister or any of those terms, it could be complete, completely definition for mine. So just because I might think you're my brother doesn't mean, you know, you're for definite, you know, I might be your brother, but your definition doesn't mean the same thing. So, you know, and aside from that, it's completely a business. So for a lot of the time, I was just doing to anybody free studio time. And one day somebody actually told me, he was like, I don't care what you tell me, I'm going to pay you for the studio time. And I was like, bro, like, I'm not tripping. I was going to be here anyways. And he told me, he's like, listen to me, bro. Even if you were going to do nothing, your time is money. You could have been on the couch just relaxing then instead. And he told me, no matter what, everybody should be paying. And it opened my eyes. It was like, you know, just because they're your homeboy or whoever it is, if not, they're going to pay the next person. So, you know, the business has to be right. If not, things will definitely get funny later.
Yeah, you got to set precedence with it, y'all, because there is nothing wrong with, you know, if there's a close relationship. We know how things work in terms of, you know, favors, you know, in terms of the money. Sometimes, you know, you may do it for free. Sometimes you may get a, depending on the relationship somebody has, it may be they may get a cut rate. Like Jay-Z says that, you know, nobody has ever paid him to do a verse. You know, and some people say he capping. I believe Sean when he says it. I think because Jay's thing is, Jay pretty much from when he came in the game in earnest in 96 and really became a superstar in 98 after Hard Knock Life, Jay became a brand. So even at that point, going back 25 years, Jay was in a position where, you know, he didn't really have to work unless he wanted to. So, you know, if he wasn't going to get on the song unless he felt it. You know, and but I believe him when he says nobody pays him for a verse, because the thing is, if he rock with you, he knows what he's bringing to you, and you know what type of jump you're going to have. Just like with the Super Bowl with Rihanna, you know, doing it, you know, it all, because the NFL Super Bowl, that's the biggest sporting event broadcast on TV. You know, so when these artists get on there, I mean, they say Rihanna shit jumped like fucking 800% in her streams. And I think, yep, her cosmetic and her lingerie line went fucking like 1,000% upstream sold after, you know, because when you get a certain circles, y'all, in a celebrity venue, your celebrity is magnified. We just got to keep it a buck on that. When you're in a certain place where you can be viewed, it exponentially increases for the exposure you get in terms of whatever product you're pushing along with it. So finances are part of the business, but I also tell people in the business, don't always look for the money. Look for the opportunity, because some opportunities are worth more than money. You can have $1 billion, and that's not going to buy you an opportunity in terms of what you may get if you're doing something in a particular situation. Some people get caught up in the greed with it, and never should you get greedy. Always look for being justly compensated. Justly compensated and greed are two different things, everybody. Know the difference. Know the difference, because some people don't. Some people don't.
Well, see, I agree with that, because I agree, because when we're doing, like, in the meantime of recording Britney Your Face and all of that music, obviously there was no money to be compensated with. We were a team and starting everything out. So if I would have tried to go for the money, I would have lost the most beautiful opportunity of my career, you know, so... Sometimes I think believing is one of the most, you know, like how you said, not every situation has to be about the cash, because if you believe or you know what's being brought to the table or what something could turn into, it's worth a lot more than, you know, it has a lot more value than the actual cash you would have made during that period. So for, you know, that's something that a lot of people just, you know, they hear the money or they need the cash at the moment and they just tend to go in that way, but even your time, if you invest it the right way, believing, then it could take you a lot further.
Yeah, and that's something where you have to look at it from how you plan it strategically, even in negotiations. you know, because this is off the cuff, and we blend a lot of things into an amalgam of analogies, and when we have these discussions, it's like the situation with what happened with LeVar Ball, with Big Baller Brand. You know, he's talking about how he's trying to secure a $1 billion deal for his son, and we're never going to down an entrepreneur, especially a black man, trying to do what he does. But it's like, dude, you got a brand that nobody really knows. You're basically trying to, you know, brag to these companies about why they need to give you $1 billion, you know, up front. I'm like, dude, you have no equity in it because nothing has been shown about why they need to give that to you. That's an audacious request you make. You know, I get you trying to secure your future, but there is such a thing as patience and negotiation. And then showing equity and branding in your product as to why it is worth that much, you know. But when you come in there trying to make outrageous demands without proof or, you know, having a real foundation with it, yes, it's not going to work. People don't like to be strong on with their money. People will give you the money if they know they're going to get something back from it because that's business. But when they feel comfortable knowing that they can do business with you and it's beneficial for both parties, that's when, you know, things become a little bit more easily to negotiate. But some people, they just look at it, well, I should get this. Well, why should you get it? What they say, well, I know my worth. What's your worth? What have you seen to practice? Yeah. It's a lot that goes on in this, darling. We know how it goes, man, because everybody wants to come in and get as much as they can. And with athletes negotiating contracts, we know that they're, you know, we're always going to be about everybody securing their financial future. But understand, you know, there's a difference between negotiating for your future and then just trying to get greedy. And when people think you're trying to just rob them, they're not going to like it, and they will shut it down quick. When you look at the game of luxury, well, and we've done this show, damn, we're like 30 minutes from being done with it. Damn, we didn't even get to how you got your name. Tell us about the name, man.
Yeah, we always talk about that.
Okay, yeah. So the name, since a kid, everyone, for some reason, they've always called me Kirby. So, honestly, I don't even know how I like got it, but everyone's always called me that since young. And then later on, I ended up dropping the Y because of, like, you know, if you look up the name, all you're going to see is the pink character. So I didn't really want any like problems with trademark and things of that nature. So I just knocked off the Y, but a lot of people still, you know, some people still, when I had the name Kirby, some of the friends and others like, oh, Curb. So when I knocked off, I was like, you know, let me just knock off the Y. But some people still call me Kirby. Some call me Curb. You know, it wasn't really like for a specific reason or any of that.
And luxury because of the life that you're living and the opportunities that have been afforded to you. What has it been like in terms of having the support of family and friends? Because this can be, in the entertainment industry, a lonely journey starting out when people don't always, and for some they got the support from everybody and some people have no support from nobody. How's it been for you in terms of having the support of your family, friends in this endeavor? You know, obviously, you know, your wife, your child, you know, and doing what you're doing.
Starting out, I would say my mom's always been really supportive of that. Or anything that, you know, I believe in, she's always been bigger on doing what I love over, like, you know, doing what's for the money. So she's always been, like, real supportive on damn near, you know, anything I thought music-wise. My pops, I had to more, like, prove it to him. He's more of, you know, he wanted me to be, like, a doctor or a dentist at the time. Obviously, because, you know, your parents just want you to be what's known as the most successful thing, you know, or a lawyer or something like that. You know, he wanted me anything in that nature.
Route, yeah.
Yeah, but little by little, as I proved to him what I was doing with music, he was, like, getting cooler with it. And then the last thing was, like, you know, from eighth, from eighth grade to right before I graduated high school, he was in prison, but when he ended up hopping out, he told me, he's like, all right, if you really want to do this, then you got to go to school. So that was the reason I ended up going to SAE. I paid for it myself and all that. But I was just like, all right, you know, if this is what I need to do to prove it to him, I'm going to do it. So while I was going to SAE is while we did the whole brick in your face thing. And that actually, you know, it showed everyone even more. I was like, you see, I didn't need to go to school. I'm just doing this to show, you know, like just for y'all. I, you know, the school didn't. It had nothing to do with breaking your face or it happening. I did learn great things in school, but nothing I learned from school or anything that had to do with school is what made the viral hit. So that, like, showed them more, and you know what I mean? But I still, regardless, I went to school just to, you know, just to prove it to them. Like, you know, I love it this much. I'll do whatever it takes to prove it. So, you know, they've always been supportive in that. Well, like I said, my pops, once I went to school, he was more supportive of it. Friends, most of the people that I kept around me either made music or, you know, were very supportive of it, because I'm the type of person that, like, I don't like anyone around me who's not, like, a dreamer or things of that nature. You know, if you can't see the vision or you don't want to work towards it or anything like that, then I don't really want you around me. So for the most part, all the friends I had around me, you know, either they were working towards the vision or they loved every part of it. You know, they were hyping me up, going everywhere with me or helping me, things of that nature, you know. My wife, she, you know, when I first got with her, I was stepping back a little bit from going to the studios heavily because she had got pregnant and stuff like that, but she's real supportive of it as well. My daughter loves every part of it. She's always seeing me on the laptop doing, like, the publishing administration. And on my office desk in the house, she has a laptop as well and her own calendar and things of that nature. So, yeah, you know, for the most part, everyone around me is pretty supportive. The, like, at least my close circle, you know, the outer circle, everyone became more supportive once Brick in Your Face got big. You know, and before that, you know, the typical thing, everyone's like, I knew you were going to make it, and, you know, which, don't get me wrong, a lot of people have along the journey, I won't lie, though, a lot of people have told me that they did believe in me, but, you know, it's like anything, not every, you know, only your direct circle is going to be next to you every day supporting it, like, for real, but I do have a lot of friends and family that, you know, support, like a motherfucker, so I won't lie there.
And that's important. We're, you know, when we look at us doing this show, we're just two individuals. I always do this. I cannot thank King, Chinchilla, Sandman enough for bringing me into the fold. King started this because he knew that he could do this better than some people out there. And people don't understand what we go through in terms of doing something like this. You know, there's a lot of work behind the scenes, but we are blessed to be able to do it, talking to people like yourself and people we talk to. And one thing about it, you know, with a podcast, you know, some people do it in one episode, some people do it 10, some people do it 100. We're pushing 600. You know, God is good. You know, but, you know,
it's
we drive, couldn't
man.
Do this.
It's a drive to keep things flowing, you know what I'm saying? You got to be able to like what you're doing.
No, of course. That's one of the important parts.
Yeah, and the people that, you know, that are meant to be with you on the journey, Luxury, they're going to be there because those are the ones, you know, we're not dream killers around. We're not dream killers around here. You know, we support around here. We're big on the go get it. But it's also, like they say, faith without, in the Bible, faith without work is dead, and you got to believe it. But also, to have the intelligence to move strategically and make the, because if you have a genuine love and move with integrity and passion, you're going to find your way, even if you don't necessarily have your GPS mapped out in terms of how to do it.
Yep.
Who would you like to work with down the line that you haven't worked with yet?
Let me think. Somebody that I like on the creative side, I would say for sure. Well, you know, one of the top ones on the creative side is Mozzie. He's probably my favorite current artist. But
Free Mozzie.
Yeah, Free Mozzie. But yeah, he's definitely number one on the list. I would want to work with Trick Daddy as well, which I don't feel like that's too far out of reach, you know, since he's here from Miami. There's a decent amount of people. I'm trying to think off the top. I can't, you know, like there's some legends that still have tracks that, you know, like if I could make production on them, like let's say like Dobie, I would love to have a song with Dobie, even though, you know, he's not here with us, but he was one of my favorite artists as well.
Yeah, man, that was a loss.
What people I would love to work with? Of course, who wouldn't want to have a track with Drake? Well, I would say before even Drake, Wayne. Wayne for sure is somebody I would love to get in the studio with. Wayne is definitely one. You know, besides Mozzie, I would say I would put Wayne up there as number two. Wayne and Mozzie would be the top two people I would want to get in the studio with.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's you know, understanding, you know, your era, you know, where you came up in music and, you know, people that really resonate with you. Obviously, we look at Wayne and everyone he had in the mid-2000s, which was just insane, you know, and then Mozzie coming in around 2015, you know, I first got hit to Mozzie in 2016 when I first heard Hit and Run. Shout out to the Mechanics again with them producing that with Slim 400, rest in peace, Mozzie, you know, and Jay Stalin, you know, and I was a fan of Mozzie ever since after that, you know, Bladder That, you know, Beautiful Struggle. I mean, of course, you know, he's that dude. Definitely low key on the wave of it. When you look at Independent Hustle, I think with him and Nipsey, those were the two main guys that embodied that go get it tenderly. You know, but definitely I could see a Mozzie slapper that you and him can put together and, you know, claim it, Luxury, claim it. You know, when he gets out.
Oh yeah, no,
you
know, it's on the way. It's on the way. I know people from his camp and stuff like that. So it's not like even with Wayne. You know, I know Gutter. Gutter's the homie. I know Jay Jones, Yaj, a bunch of people from Wayne's camp. It's not like it's not even like a dream. You know, it's right there. You know what I mean? It's just people. You know, okay. I want to do it, but it's right there. You know, I'm claiming it for sure. It's done.
Well, we're not done with the show yet, but you know when it happens, you know,
I was gonna shoot this to you too, and this, and we actually talked about this the other day. Now, you know, you work with NBA YoungBoy, and you see that this guy's career is taking off a life of his own. Like, you see this guy breaking records, streaming records, and I'm going to be honest with you guys, I thought it was a hoax. I thought it was a fluke until I really, you know, got outside and, you know, started being around these youngsters, and they really like this.
He's got some
bars. What do you think? What do you think is the appeal that this guy has? Because, you know, you got people saying that he's the era Tupac. Like, what do you guys think is so appealable with this guy?
Honestly, it's hard for me to say exactly why the masses really like to be. I love the music, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
they say when you think of the majority of the fans, they don't, at least from what I've heard, they typically don't look like us. So I'm not sure why, you know, the other majority of the people love the music so much. But hey, you know, it's at the end of the day, I think no matter how you look or any of that, if the music's great, you're going to feel it. You know, I'm sure there's other genres of music that you'll hear it. And if it rocks, no matter if it's, you know, rock or some old, you know, whatever it is, you know, even blues, right, or something, if it's got a tight melody and the person's singing that thing right, you know, it's going to hit. So maybe it's just that since YoungBoy, he's young and he resonates with the people on a different level. I can't say exactly why, but, you know, you hear it, and he's definitely going. And I hear the younger generation, you know, anytime I see younger people, they definitely do rock with him. So it's like you said, it's not fake, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think with YoungBoy, man, he just has this, it's indescribable, this energy that he has when he gets on the mic. He just and he's been moving for some years now in terms of doing it. You know, that joint, one thing, I really had to give it up to him when I heard him on that E-40 Straight Out the Dirt. Young boy bodied that shit. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't know that he really, really could spit like that. Like, he really can go. He's not a gimmick. This dude really, really can, when you see a talent like that who legitimately has lyrics, we know about some of the troubles with the law that he's had. And the main concern is that you don't want to see that getting derailed because of reckless behavior, because the boy's got, he's got a following and he's made some money doing it. You know, in terms of the audience that he's found, that energy he has really, really connects with his people, and that's what you strive to do as an artist in terms of getting out there. When you think about the artist today, Luxury, because we're seeing a lot of situations with some of these younger artists getting out there, not necessarily understanding the assignment of staying out of trouble, and they're finding themselves in a lot of it. What is your advice to this generation of up-and-comers about keeping your mind on the business and staying out of trouble with the law?
The first rule is the streets and the business is two different, completely different streets. If you want to, you know, walk the street, go walk on the street. But if you want to walk the business, walk on the sidewalk. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, just for so many reasons, it's like, you know, if God gives you that blessing, why are you going to stay into trouble? For starters. Second of all, you're going to lose a lot of money, and, you know, you're going to cost everybody around you all sorts of, you know, whether it's money, you know, people are going to be, you know, sad about whatever comes with it that happens to the artist. But on top of it, if you're not independent, you're going to be looked at as the biggest liability. You know, what label manager or any investor wants, you know, you want the minimum risk possible. So, you know, like, not for nothing, like, looking at all the artists like Gucci Mane signed, do you think he's going to want to continue in that path signing artists like that? We're probably going to see a change in the next few artists he drops because the liabilities that come with signing these street artists. So I feel like that's something that, you know, it's real important with, you know, these artists have to, like, learn to, you know, yeah, even if, you know, you lived that life or whatever it was, I feel like once you get that opportunity, you got to learn how to, you know, just give it up. And, you know, it's two completely different worlds. But at the end of the day, I feel like part of the problem is everybody has an ego and things of that nature. So, you know, people want to look like the biggest, the baddest, the toughest, or, you know, they have something to prove, stuff like that. But I think, you know, they should keep it completely separated. People are losing their blessings by trying to be tough, while the people that are actually tough are wishing they had that blessing so they didn't have to act tough anymore, you know? Or not even act tough, but be tough, you know? Because, you know, once you have those blessings, what are you acting like a gangster for? You know, you can just stay out the way, hire your security, and that's it. Give it all up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Gucci, and that's a great point you made, Luxury. When you look at Gucci and Gucci really
got out to Martina. Hello?
Yeah. Hey, Max, you there?
Gucci got into a place, you know, huh?
Yeah, we jumped a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, and a little phone's out up a little bit. Yeah, but when Gucci, reading Gucci's book, man, like, you could see when Gucci talked about all the legal issues that he had, and he just said he was just tired. You know, he knew he had to change his life. You know? And, in the book, he talks about that, like all the trouble he. I mean, everybody knows Guwop's street reputation, and it's a real one. That ain't exaggeration, y'all. Like, Gooch was really out there, but
you know, when you look at what he had gone through, going to jail all those times, you know, it really woke him up. Like, dude, I got a career, nigga, I got a wife, you know. I'm like, I gotta be home, you know. And he figured it out, and God bless him, he got it together. Now, a lot of artists need to understand that you can't make no money hard. You can't make as much money when you down sitting down. And you know, you definitely don't want to get out there talking crazy to people, you know, acting like they can't do something to you. Because we've seen situations where a lot of lives are lost because dudes thought they were too big. And now you weren't too big to catch that hot one they put up in you. So you respect everybody. Go about your business, doing your job, and maintain doing your job. You know, that's all it is. That's all you got to do. Don't block your blessing, like you said, Luxury. You know, and that's real tall.
Exactly, man. You know, like I said, at the end of the day, you don't want to be looked at as a liability, because some of these artists, it's not even a label, it's an investor. So at the end of the day, if it's an investor, you don't, you know, I think how artists have to see themselves is, which, you know, like, keep yourself, like, you're a business. You're not just, you know, just an artist or just yourself. You're a business. So would you, if you were an investor or a label, would you want to work with a business that at any time it could get, let's say, shut down, as in, you know, like if they get hurt or anything like that? You know, like, you want to be working with a business that, you know, it's the least risk possible. So I feel like that's why it's real important for them to stay out the way.
Yeah. I mean, this is pretty much something that's important. You know, one thing about this this time we've had with you, Luxury, as we close on the last 10 minutes of this, dude, we have enjoyed this so much. You know, from when we first corresponded, because we occasionally, we get a lot of follow requests, and like anything, because we like to know who is getting with us in terms of following us, and we like to know people. We ask people about how do they find us, you know, and some people never answer, this, that, and the other. You gave us such a detailed, comprehensive, respectful, and humble response that we had to get you on this show, because we saw the passion, we saw the conviction, we saw... You acknowledged us in terms of listening to what we did, and you took the time to tell us about that. And we really, really, really appreciated that from you, man, in terms of, you know, it lets us know that we're doing our job and we're getting out there. And we always want to give exposure to those who support us. You know, you said you had heard Trop's show that he had did with us. Shout out to him. We got to get him back on soon. And, dude, I mean... We've enjoyed having you on. You know, you're welcome back anytime. You know, and you're winning. You're gonna keep winning. Keep that undefeated streak of unique, and just driving to be the best you can be. Being the best, you know, consultant on publishing. Being the best husband. Being the best father. Being an all around dope person, man. We really, really appreciate you coming on with us, man, and we thank you for this.
No, thank you guys for having me, man. I really appreciate it. At the end of the day, you know, you guys let me on your platform, so, you know, it's a major blessing just to be here with you guys. Thank you both, and thank you to the rest of your team, because I know, you know, anything, there's always the people you don't see or you might not hear, so thank you to everyone that's involved.
Yeah, and for us doing this 8 years, you know, we have had so many people behind the scenes, you know, who have supported us. And, you know, so everybody plays a part. And, you know, the way, you know, you were promoting the show and you had people chiming in. So for those listening out there, you know, who tuned in tonight, we thank you so much for tuning in with us as well. And, you know, first of all, you know, supporting Luxury and all of his dopeness, and supporting us, listening to our platform, having him on it, you know. So it shows that collectively it all comes around full circle to how, as people, we always are there for each other, and how when we know there's something that can really benefit others, how instead of hating, we lend a helping hand. And that's how we move humanity forward in terms of being pragmatic.
Exactly, man. I believe, me personally, in collaboration. At the end of the day, if me and you work together, now we're expanding. You know, we're putting whatever we're putting out, it's going to both of our audiences, which obviously is going to cause growth. So I think collaboration, especially now with the internet, it's one of the most beautiful things. So anytime, you know, if there's any way I can support you guys, you know, you supported me, so I'm here for anything, for anything you ask for, you know.
Well, we appreciate it. One thing about it, y'all, in terms of the internet, you know, we look at it, it's been great for us, and we're going to keep doing this as long as we can. One thing about it, I think, when you see a lot of these people out here, before we get out of here, look, what do people have to understand about the internet and the image that they're promoting in terms of finding new people and then just making sure that it's a positive message people can resonate with as opposed to a negative one? So we see niggas out here acting a fucking fool online and just don't understand, like, dude, you're in a public space. You may want to think about what you're doing out there.
Well, first off, you know, a lot of people, I feel like they forget most of anything on the internet is permanent. Aside from that, it just really depends on each person how you want to be viewed or seen. But I believe in, first of all, you got to respect everybody, no matter, you know, how big or little, or, you know, how they look or what they are. Respecting everybody is really important, and then how you conduct yourself. Because, you know, if you're handling your business sloppy or not doing things right, who's going to either recommend you or who's going to want to work with you? So I think how you conduct yourself and how you treat others is one of the most important things, because if you're a great person and you do great work, why would, you know, everyone's going to tell some, you know, like, oh man, this is the best guy, he does everything good, and so on and so forth, when you know, with the opposite, no one wants to work with the person who treats them bad or is negative. You know, you don't want to be around that kind of person. So you definitely, I feel like how you conduct yourself and treat people is one of the most important things.
Definitely.
Man, you know, we got about three more minutes to spare. You care to let people know where they can find you?
On Instagram at Luxury Living Curb. That's what I mainly use. I don't really use too many of the other handles. So, yeah, on Instagram at Luxury Living Curve, that's the easiest way to catch me as far as communication. Or email info@luxurylivingmedia.com is another way if, you know, you want to communicate with me.
Definitely. Lux, you know, you got both of our contacts. We're going to be in touch with you outside of this as well. Once again, to you and yours, we love you all so much. Thank you for everything. And as we get out of here, we want to send nothing but peace and blessings to everybody out there. Stay positive, stay prosperous, stay loving, stay learning, and stay, and most importantly, educationally earning in your existence. And, you know, always keep doing
line,
what you
man.
Do, no matter what it is. Yeah, man, we're going to definitely push
Amen.
That line.
Amen to that. Amen. But thank y'all
definitely.
For having me through.
You are very welcome. King, take us out of here, bro.
All right. Check us next Friday night. Same Off the Cuff Radio time, same Off the Cuff Radio channel, man. Peace out.
Peace. And we out.
Peace.